Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good morning, everyone. You're listening to the
FreeIntroMusic.com layout track. This is a demo sound of FreeIntroMusic.com.
All right, good morning, everyone. Let's try this again. You are listening to the Georgia Prison News weekly morning radio show. I want to thank everyone for joining us this morning as we go over the things that transpired this week in the Georgia Department of Corrections. It was a busy week this week, and a lot of things took place. We learned of some more deaths and just some other things that took place at different facilities. So we're going to kind of dive into that this morning and try to see if we can learn something new that took place. So joining me at this time, my guest, who's been with me for the last 3 weeks. So she's rolling right along with me, and she puts up with me every day. And we try to put our brains together and come up with solutions. So, Susan, are you with me?
I am. Welcome, everybody.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to a beautiful day, and I'd love to hear some good news out of the Department of Corrections. Don't think that's
right.
Going to happen. The worst thing I think we need to start with is this. Last Saturday, 1 week ago, GDC was reporting 72 staff, 83 inmates. Yesterday, Friday, 7 days, 78 staff, 189 inmates, an increase of 106. That they are reporting. Let me give you an example. At Phillips, they are reporting 10 inmates sick. We have a pretty good authority that tells us there are 22 in dorm B2 and more in C, which is the whole. Very disturbing. How do you address it if you don't know the truth?
Right, Susan, and just so we can fill our listeners in, and it may have been just on my end, but what facility was that? Because I think it may have broke out.
That's Phillips State Prison.
Okay, and then, Susan, I had another question because someone had brought it to my attention this past week, and it may have been in some of the comments that that were out there when the information came in on the two deaths of the gentleman, I think, at Autry State Prison, and one was at Jackson State Prison. Can you kind of give the listeners a understanding on what the Department of Corrections means by underlining conditions?
Underlying conditions. They are talking about advanced age in particular, and they're talking about comorbidities such as asthma, COPD, heart conditions, things that if you were to get sick, you're likely to be even sicker because of somehow being weakened. It's estimated that around half of the inmates in the Department of Corrections can be classified as having underlying conditions. The way these pronouncements of their deaths are being made, the last three at least, sound as if, oh, they had underlying conditions and we did our best, but they were sick and it wasn't our fault. That's what it sounds like. Maybe it's not intended to sound that way.
Right, and that's what I just find it odd that that's the first thing that they put out is these deaths were caused by underlying conditions, and I didn't notice it until someone brought it to my attention this past week on the they're putting out the underlying conditions things, and like you say, it may not be intentional, but it's just odd at this point.
You know, we have a lot of anecdotal information. Between Joshua and I, we're connected to literally thousands of people now. And I heard from one of them that the man at Coastal who died, I believe was 68, and died. He died on his way back from the fourth time he'd gone to medical and been turned away. And he died on his way back. And they said he had underlying medical conditions. Well, why weren't they treating the underlying medical conditions? Why turn people away? And I've heard that over and over. In particular, this last week, people asking to go to medical and being told no.
Yeah, I mean there's so much going on with that, and I think that's at facilities statewide, because you know I've heard of instances where people are just has no more than a sore throat or a cough or something, and has been turned away from seeking medical treatment and has been told. And I've been hearing stories and things like that where people are even trying to fill out medical. They don't even have any of the forms inside of the booth. So you know it's very troubling. You know, that's the first thing that they tell you if you're sick or if you have any type of issue going on with your health, is to fill out a medical request form. Well, if you don't have any medical request form, then what are you supposed to do?
It's a glaring issue to me that this is not done electronically. Everyone should have access to either a tablet or a kiosk. Why is this not done at the touch of a finger? And then they'd have an electronic record. They could triage the cases ahead of time. They would know for a fact how many get turned away, don't get seen, magically get cured, whatever it is that goes on. They'd have a way to assess the numbers. But by having this paper system with 60,032 inmates, how in the name of God are you supposed to manage a paper system with 60,000 inmates in 90 facilities?
Well, and Susan, I think they do that so it doesn't hold them accountable, where they can say, well, so-and-so, John Doe or Jane Doe never turned in a sick call or never turned in this or never turned in that. That's their way of hiding things where, you know, if something was to arise, they wouldn't have to come back and produce that paper.
There are actually a couple of people that are in one of the Georgia groups who were two things. They were nurses who worked at Georgia prisons, and then they became inmates. And they tell a story of just tearing the sick call slips up, just telling people no. The inmates truly have no voice. If they can't fill out a sick call slip, and if they, how in the world are they supposed to get integrated into this system, what we're looking at right now, where there is a pandemic in 106 people, 106 inmates? That the more people were sick, and we know that those numbers are greatly increased above that.
Oh yeah,
I think it
goes without saying now that the numbers that the Department of Corrections has released thus far is just I hate to say it, but it's just a scam of numbers. They're not testing the guys and the ladies like they're supposed to be, and if they are, they're not releasing the actual numbers. I mean, it was brought to my attention this week, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because I can't exactly remember I know who sent it to me, but remember what he said, so I'm going to kind of paraphrase. But and Susan, you can jump in with me too, because you probably know a little bit better than I do. But there was one day this week where the numbers were just were not very big, and then the next day those numbers. And I think it could have been at a facility, or it may have been just the overall numbers jumped right off the page.
Yeah, it was all three. It went from 1 to 38 in a day.
Right. So that led me to believe that, and like everyone else, that just that they haven't been being honest with us, because I think I made a comment. Well, do you want us to believe that they tested 37 people in one day and got those test results back? So, you know, they've been knowing. The numbers continue to rise at all three, and the Georgia Department of Corrections are just playing with the numbers.
Absolutely true. I heard something last Sunday. It was very disturbing, and then it was repeated later this week. What I heard came from one of the big state prisons, and it was a man who had spent roughly 30 years in prison, and he'll be there for many years to come. He said it was the worst experience, the worst 3 weeks he'd had in 30 years. He was put into the hole because of, first, the quarantine. He was there 2 weeks, followed by, once he became symptomatic, another week. There were men in there. Many of them were mental health inmates and older inmates at that. He described soap, no toilets, using buckets instead of toilets, having no ability to shower for 3 weeks because people were being housed in the shower with a bucket, that his hands were so dirty because of having no toilet paper, that he ate his food like a dog off his tray, and that lasted 3 weeks. What he didn't describe was getting any kind of medicine or humans even to interact. I understood that the guards come in, sign the chart, and leave, but they wouldn't even. The guards were afraid of the sick inmates. These inmates,
right,
many of them, I'm having no clothes, no mat, no sheet, no blanket. And it was a couple of weeks, well, last week when it was cold at night. And these are grown men crying.
Yeah.
And this is all described
at this facility. But we're also hearing reports of the same exact thing taking place at Central State Prison, where, offenders are in cells, supposedly quarantined in cells with no clothes, no sheets, no blankets, no having to use the bathroom in a plastic bag, no showers, sleeping on the shower floor. I mean, that's horrific, and it's pitiful that the Department of Corrections and these wardens and people of that nature would have these human beings sleeping in the floors of the showers.
It sounds like something you'd hear going on in the Middle East or in the Caribbean somewhere, or it's a third world kind of situation in the best country in the world. How in the world can this happen? Who stands for these inmates and says, this will not stand, we're not going to do this?
Right, and I want the listeners and everyone that's listening live, and it's my understanding that there's some type of problem with the live feed right now. I did look it up, and it does say that we're on the air and live, but it's not showing playing our audio. So hopefully they'll get that fixed, and people can go back and listen later on. We'll provide the links. I wanted to continue on this topic, Susan, because I think this is very important that we continue to talk about these conditions that these quarantine offenders are having to live in right now. I mean, and like you said, you know, this isn't the Middle East or some third world country. I mean, this is America. And the conditions that I've, the deplorable conditions that I've heard of this week, from Central State Prison to Phillips State Prison to several prisons around the state, they're not showing any type of compassion. You know, they're not showing that they care about these people. You take them and you throw them in a shower and you take all their clothes, and you leave them in there for so long. And, Susan, I think, well, I read something this morning that the Department of Corrections actually quarantines offenders for 14 days. Have you saw that?
That is the number they said that they would quarantine them 14, and then 7. If they had symptoms, it would be another 7. But if they
right,
were exposed, they would quarantine them 14.
Okay, because I think the CDC guidelines. I didn't mean to cut you off. I think the CDC guidelines is like 7 days, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I can verify that though. I've got that kind of at my fingertips.
Okay, but yeah, but as I was saying, you know, we've been hearing all week. And just so the listeners and everyone to know, listening live or going to go back and listen later on, Georgia, the Human and Civil Rights Coalition of Georgia will be sending a letter this evening to the commissioner, to the governor, and to the numerous news outlets in our state with these our concerns for the conditions at both, what a letter will be pertaining to Central State Prison, but we'll also try to, you know, add in there or add in there with the Phillips State Prison and Baldwin State Prison and all these facilities that's pretty much experiencing the same thing with the this outbreak and this pandemic because. As I said, if no one speaks up for these guys, Susan, and these ladies too, because there's some things that I want to touch on as well with these ladies, with the women's prisons that kind of went unnoticed this week as well, that someone sent me a note about. But you know, we got to send letters and we got to continue to try to fight because as Susan said, you know, they have no voice. Behind these walls, I mean, it hurts my heart, Susan, just to know that someone is suspected of having COVID-19, and they've been thrown in a shower for 7 days or for however many days it is, and just left there.
Yep, I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't heard it from someone. I heard it from another mother who talked to the inmate, gotten out after 21 days in a shower. And she said they were both in tears on the phone. Now, we all know there are people who exaggerate and manipulate and so forth. This has a ring of truth to it, as well as it's repeated at other facilities. This didn't take a rocket scientist 6 weeks ago to say, what are we going to do if this many people get sick? Let's say it's 60 people at a single facility. Where are we going to house them in such a way that, using the CDC recommendation, that you don't house those with symptoms with those who are simply quarantined because of being exposed? They have to be held separately. So who didn't plan for this? We were told it was coming. Every one of us knows and live 3 feet apart, if that. Not six, not 13, 3 feet, if that. They breathe each other's air all day.
I mean, and Susan, not to cut you off, but I was thinking the other day while I think I was driving and doing something, and I was thinking the other day that, I mean, I can remember sitting in my living room a couple of months ago and hearing the coronavirus was not in the United States, but there I was remembering, and a story that goes back to me becoming aware of this coronavirus is when China was building a hospital. I think they built the hospital in like 3 days, and that was months ago. You know, that was months ago before it even got here, and I know if I saw it, everyone else have had to see it, and you know, to become better prepared to this thing here that no one has. I mean they're acting just like they were so caught off guard by this, but they had a month and a half, 2 months to prepare for it.
They also have, at the touch of a button, access to asking for help. Anyone needing to can ask the governor to call up guard. They've called the guard here in Rockdale County to sanitize the jail. They had so many people, so many sheriffs and deputies were sick. They had to sanitize the entire jail. They couldn't do it themselves. They were that sick. And the guard has gone into nursing homes. They're not merely sanitizing it. They're also doing training and so forth of the residents as well as the caretakers or the caregivers. So this, shame on us. Shame on us. This isn't a banana republic. And yet, those in charge, instead of facing it head on and being honest about what's going on, seem to be playing a shell game with us as to what's going on with those we love behind the wall.
Yeah, their focus is emails and banning people that's trying to help instead of focusing on the issues at hand and trying to help the offenders that's currently locked up. That's what their goal is right now. Not to face the issues, but to cause more issues, you know, than what they obviously what they can handle.
You know, I think we're all are grown ups. We know that Department of Corrections is a complex organization. It's got lots of buildings, lots of people. It's loaded up on bureaucracy. But we've let 60,000 people be sitting ducks.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's horrible. And it looks like there's no end game in sight. There looks like there is no solution in sight on how to deal with this pandemic inside of the prisons. As you can see, numbers continue to rise. As you can see, deaths continue to rise. I mean, we lost two freaking people in one day. You know, and for their negligence, Susan, I mean, it's there's no other reason but to report this. I mean, this thing happened in Autry State Prison. One of the guys was at Autry State Prison. I mean, this Autry went from, as we said a few seconds ago, Autry went from one case into 38 cases. And you mean to tell me within when this one case was reported that they didn't do anything, that they didn't take any measures to try to stop this spread when the one started by putting people in quarantine? I mean, you know, they're unprepared, Susan. They're incompetent, number one, to do anything to come up with any that makes any sense. You know, and I mean, you can't tell me that they didn't have time to prepare from the time of this one case, and now you have over 38 cases there at Altru.
38 that they're acknowledging.
Right, 38 that they're acknowledging what we know of.
Actually, I'm sorry, 52 as of yesterday at all three.
Okay, so 52, so that's even worse. So from 38 to 52 cases, and no one has even tried to prepare from when the first ones came out until we learned of the 37, 38 cases. They've done nothing. I mean, they're incompetent to do anything to try. And I'm almost at the point now, do they even want to, I mean, to help anybody? I mean, people could be the parole board. They could be releasing people, nonviolent offenders, elderly people. I mean, you know, they could be releasing people, but their mind is on I don't even know what their mind is on. It's like they're non-existent, Susan. So, you know, it starts to get, once you start thinking about it and continue to talk about it, it gets really frustrating.
You know, one of the flaws, I guess, in the argument of saying we should release nonviolent is that Georgia doesn't really measure crimes as violent and nonviolent. They use the crime severity level scale of 1 to 8. Why not say, let's release every person who's crime severity level 1. Open the door, send them home. You could do it probably in 3 days. But you'd have to have the will to do it. But they are no risk. They did some kind of, pardon my expression, chicken you know what crime that ended them up in prison. But you better believe it, a crime severity level 1. They didn't hurt anybody. They probably didn't have a victim. They probably did something stupid in front of somebody. And that's not to say they didn't break a law. But are they a risk? Probably not. There are any number of ways to slice and dice this. Are they elderly, like Guy Swanner, the man that the ACLU wrote the letter about, 81 years old, 5 days later, he has an answer from the parole board. They'll be reviewing him at his parole eligibility date, November 2022. He's 81 years old now.
Right. And Susan, I think two things. I think I saw where the department releases about 800 people a month. And they interviewed the director of the parole board, and I think that he said that let's back up for just a second. I think that when we heard of the 200 people to be released about a month and a half ago, we thought that they were just going to release 200 people and call it. So I read an article, I think by Christian Boone or Joshua Sharp, or I think that's his name. But I read that article, And so the parole board clarified its position on what they're going to do. So they're going to still release their 800 people that they release a month, plus they're going to add 200 onto that number. So you're looking at 1,000 people being released a month, supposedly, and that's the guidelines that the parole board's going to be doing from, I guess, until this kind of goes away. And my second point I wanted to make is in prison right now you have 85% of the prison population is parole violations and probation violations. I mean, you got people
yep.
in prison. You got people in prison. You got people in right now for pissing off their parole or probation officer, failing a drug screen, moving without giving a new address, catching misdemeanor charges that's been dismissed, 6-7 months ago, what else? You have people in that I said dirty urine. You have people in just for all kinds of minor violations. Why the hell have they not released those people?
I know a number of people who were arrested, returned on violation of parole, a VOP, and then later found not guilty of the crime, but they're not getting released, even though they were not guilty. They're being returned because they had contact with police. They sat in the back seat of a police car, and that somehow in this country puts your ass in prison. How does this make sense? People who don't live it don't believe it. My friends say, oh, that can't be right. Oh, yeah.
Right. You have that can't be right, or if that's true, or if that, or if that. I mean, until you've lived that, until you know a little bit about it, that's why I don't even take, I mean, and I think it was last week's show, Susan, or the week before show, I had officers. I've heard officers say, and I've heard administrators say, and I've heard people say all the time that, that came from inmate.com. Inmate.com is 95% reliable than what the Department of Corrections will tell you. believe it that this stuff happens. Believe it that this stuff is happening. I mean, you know, there was a comment the other day that someone left on if that's true, or, you know, I mean, who's going to make up? And I can't remember the situation now that had transpired, but, you know, who's going to sit back and make up some of this stuff that's going on? I mean, you know, go ahead, Susan.
That lady said exactly that. If that's true,
right.
Oh, please. Yeah, who would ever make this up?
Yeah, I mean, and you can't make some of this stuff up that goes on with these people. I mean, it's just like, you know, there's something every day. And, you know, Susan, also, you know, with these issues that's taking place, you know, they don't try to, they've now stopped even responding to me. Once if I send them something, or if I, you know, they don't even respond by email like they used to.
No.
They just, I will say this, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. There was a situation the other night where a friend of mine actually had to send him, a friend of mine, he's out in California, and he helped me with, you know, he really handled some of the promotion side of things and tweeting things out for us and things like that. His name's Larry, and he actually told me, he actually sent an email to Jennifer, Amos, help me with that name.
Woman. Ammons.
Ammons, right. So he actually sent her an email the other night, and she actually called a warden that same night with an issue, and, you know, and I think she took care of the issue. But I will say this about her. She plays both sides. I figured that out. Well, it's not just her. I believe all of them do. But, you know, they play both sides of the fence. Nevertheless, I think that, you know, they kind of have stopped, you know, they're tired of hearing from everyone, and they're tired of having to explain their incompetence and why they weren't ready for a pandemic that now has attacked their prison system. And I did see, Susan, I don't know if you saw this, but the ACLU of South Carolina has actually already filed suit trying to have them have their Supreme Court or someone in that state to try to release elderly offenders. Have you saw that, Susan?
I did, 2 or 3 days ago. And someone asked me, why hasn't our ACLU done that? Well, good question. But, you know, in fairness, the different state ACLUs are autonomous. They can do whatever they need to do in their state circumstances. I would love to see our Georgia ACLU take a greater, stronger stand. As far as I know, their letters requesting those two inmates be released is as strong a position as they took so far.
Right. Go ahead, Susan. I can cut you off.
Yeah, perhaps they will. Look, Joshua, I'm looking at our numbers from yesterday. Autry State Prison has capacity of 1,712 inmates. Right now, they've got 3% of the inmates being reported as being sick. How many are actually sick? This pandemic, I mean,
right. How many have actually been told that there's nothing wrong with you? Go back to the dorm.
Yeah, Johnson State Prison. Almost 2% of the inmates are acknowledged as being sick. Then the hard numbers, Autry, 52, Johnson, 27. That's a lot of sick people. If we'll think back to the first of this, when the first man died, the first inmate who died, at Lee. When he died, he had already been in the hospital on a ventilator 2 weeks. I want to know how many people are hospitalized.
Right. And can we issue an open records request for that, Susan, and try to get that information without asking? I mean, of course, you'd have to play – you know, you have to play their game and not and in the records request not ask their names or any medical conditions about them, because they'll just scream HIPAA violation and they can't release that information. But I wonder if we could actually file an open records request and try to get the information on how many is actually hospitalized right now.
I have no reason not to try. This past week, I've sent in 3 ORAs, Open Records Act requests. One that I sent in, I want to know what the so-called corona killer is that they're spraying in the prisons. I believe they probably, if they haven't completely done all 90 facilities, they're close. They've been through most of the prisons, and they put people outside, they evacuated for and sprayed, kept them out an additional 15 minutes, and let them come back. If you were to spray, to fumigate, say, for roaches, cockroaches, you would have people out of that building 6 hours, not 15 minutes.
Yeah, and do we even know if there's, I mean, you can spray all day, but if you don't wipe down anything, then what use is that going to do to anything?
they are wiping essentially nothing. They go, I mean, I've seen the guy standing in the middle of a dorm, or not in a dorm, in a regular, you know, where there's a commons area. He's standing there, he's got a little painter suit on and a face shield, but he's breathing room air and standing there just spraying into the air. I don't get it. I mean, I want to know what that is. What I've asked for is the label. I've asked for the material safety data sheet. I've asked for the EPA registration number. Those three pieces of information will tell us. Now, I may be denied. Pretty much everything I ask will get denied, but I'm willing to try.
Well, Susan, I'll have to give them the benefit of the doubt on this one because I'm three, and we're 3 for 3 on our open records request so far. You know, we did send a letter to Timothy Ward and the Department of Corrections about an issue at Waycross Prison on an individual that wasn't receiving proper medical treatment, and we gave them 30 days to answer our letter, and they did. And we sent it to Jennifer, and she did send back. Well, we won't be able to release the information on his medical treatment because it's a HIPAA violation, and so we had to respond to her and pretty much let her know that, hey, we're not stupid. You know, we specifically asked for. We never asked for to supply us with what medical treatment he did receive. The only thing we did ask is that you let us know that he has received the proper medical treatment that he's requested. So we had to get that solved with them, and then we actually had to we're counting down to those 30 days to see if the situation with them is going to be rectified. And then we found out that since our letter and since his family has been calling the last few weeks, and then another issue arose with his health this week, we come to find out that he's been being harassed by an officer who's there, and he's been harassed because of the phone calls and the letters that that were received on his behalf. So, you know, that's typically how they go. They deny open records requests. Sometimes they refuse to answer letters. They refuse to answer any type of correspondence. You know, it's big secret, Susan. It's really they're running a secretive operation there at Department of Corrections site.
The thing about HIPAA, it is for health care providers.
Right.
It isn't. It doesn't protect prisons. There's no provision saying you can't say how many people are in the hospital from this facility. They certainly can't tell us. I don't want to know that Joe Brown was treated with this medication and for this long a period. And I don't want that. But I want to know, are they receiving, are they sick enough to be hospitalized? And are they receiving some modicum of care that's appropriate to their level of illness? Honestly, you have these people on TV whining about how sick they were. What medication is being given to our inmates in Georgia? We know they received 60,000 doses of the medication.
Well,
but I haven't heard.
And if you've been reading the news and looking in the news, that medication is horseshit. Excuse my expression, but it's no good.
We're learning more every day about this thing, and without a doubt, it's an ugly disease. We're hearing blood clots and that some of the problems with the secretions in the lungs is that they get hardened and can't be gotten up. I'm concerned. I really am.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrific situation that's going on, Susan. I think that it's sad at the same time. It makes you very angry on why the department is doing what they're doing. I mean, it's bad. It's pitiful.
That makes me sad. It truly does.
So, Susan, what else is going on? What have you been working on this week as far as your open records requests and other things like that? Give us a rundown on how they have no voice and the nonprofits coming along.
We're doing really well. We opened a campaign about a week ago to try to raise the money. We have a budget of $775 that will take us completely to be a nonprofit status. And that, as of night before last, we were right at 60%, and I'm hoping that we're up. I haven't checked yet today. I hope we're up around 75-80% of the way, but we're going to make it. It's really kind of exciting. We're going to make it.
Oh, yeah.
And,
go ahead.
I'm excited about it. I've known for months this was the right thing, the right way to take this. And, when I started actually documenting all the different things I was working, I was like, holy cow, I have been busy. So I believe with everything in me that we're going to do right things. Our goal, our end game, is to provide enough information on civil rights violations of the Eighth Amendment, that's against cruel and unusual punishment, to provide enough information.
I'm sorry. Give the listeners the way that they can donate to let's get this done so we can move on to the next step.
Awesome. Yes, there's a page. If you aren't a member of They Have No Voice Facebook group, there's a page called THNV Movement. And that has a little 1.5 minute long movie that has a donate button in it. And if you click on that, it shows the 50 investigations we've got going on related to CRIPA, and then a donate button. And there's also a button to click to get regular emails and so forth.
And I want to stay on this subject just a little bit longer because I think it's very important. If you're listening, it's very, very easy to donate. I donated, I think, a few nights ago, and it's easy. It's very secure. Go there, and it's actually a PayPal. You can donate via PayPal, so I donated. And it's very simple, easy, and quick. So all of you out there that's saying you don't have time to do it or whatever, it doesn't take 3 minutes to enter your information in and, donate to a good cause and to, this organization is so important because, it's providing these individuals with a voice that they wouldn't have without it. So we need to go ahead and try to help Susan get this done hopefully this weekend, so we can continue for her to do the good work that she's doing. Go ahead, Susan.
Donations are $5, $10. That's what the majority of these are, and they add up. I know that a lot of people have been helped in the last several years because of efforts from me and from other people as well. This is how this works. We're going to help each other. The people we've got that we love who are behind the walls cannot help themselves for the most part. They can do their part to stay out of trouble to some extent. They can, well, mostly they can. But otherwise, they don't have any options or any ability to advocate for themselves. Every time they open their mouth, they're told, "You are a liar."
Right. So, you know, we just have to continue to fight, and there's a lot of issues that's taking place this week, and you know, I urge everyone to stay connected and to continue to issue your statements on things that's taking place and transpiring with your loved ones and with other loved ones, and just keeping everyone informed, because you know we document this stuff, we try to get this stuff out as best as possible and as quick as possible, and it helps us, you know, send these letters to add this stuff to our data or whatnot. So please continue to keep us informed with everything that's going on, so we can best help as best we can.
I don't know. Most people probably know this, but I will tell you that there are about a half dozen groups in Georgia that are Facebook groups that advocate on behalf of inmates in the Georgia Department of Corrections. I go through those pages, those groups, every day and copy and paste. I will copy from there anything of particular interest and put it into a spreadsheet by date, so that we've kind of got a running, a collated, organized sheet on what's happening at Baldwin, what's happening at Johnson, what's happening at Rutledge. And some days, nothing. It's great. But some days, you want to put your head down and cry. But you don't really see it until you see it all together. You see 5, 6, 7 people saying certain things are going on. There may be something to that.
Right. Go ahead.
We want to give them a voice. That's all.
Right. So, in closing, Susan, for this week's show, is there anything that you want to add or let the listeners listen? No.
Folks, please continue to provide us with the information that you get. Also, remember, you are your loved one's advocate. They are not able to advocate for themselves. If you don't know the right way to advocate for them, get in touch with me. Get in touch with Joshua. We'll point you in the right direction if we can. But we're here to make a difference. In my entire life, nobody has ever said to me, "You are telling a lie." And I'm just appalled that that's the approach that we address 60,000 people with every single day. They are not all liars. They're good people behind the walls, just like they're bad people out here.
Exactly. All right, so we're going to leave it there. You get the last word for this week. Susan, I thank you for joining me this week, and bringing in attention that's 100% most needed to our listeners and everyone out there. So I definitely appreciate you.
Thank you, Joshua. Thank you for the platform and for the opportunity to do this. We're going to do right things for these people. They cannot help themselves.
Absolutely. Okay, Susan. So I thank you again, and hopefully we'll speak with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, Joshua. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you have been listening to this week's edition of the Georgia Prison News show, along with Susan Sparks Burns. You can find her on Facebook at They Have No Voice. Just search Facebook and you'll find that information there. Until next week, thank you. Thanks to everyone for listening in, and we will touch base with you again next week.